Remember back when corporations drowning in profits were spending a lot of that money buying back their own stock? Yeah, like yesterday? That might be changing. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Baltimore, I'm Amy Scott, in for Kai Rizdahl. It's Thursday, July 14th. Good to have you with us. Second quarter earnings season is underway, and as we told you earlier this week, there will be a lot to look for as some of the country's biggest banks open their books to shareholders. Today, J.P. Morgan Chase reported a worse-than-expected 28% drop in quarterly earnings, blaming economic worries like the war in Ukraine, inflation, and Fed tightening. The bank also said it's suspending share buybacks, that practice of a company buying its own stock that reached record levels last year and had been on pace for another record this year. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab gets us started with this explainer.
If you have a bunch of extra cash sitting around, financial advisors will say you should do something with it. Same goes for companies. John Blank is chief equity strategist at Zacks Investment Research. He says after last year's post-lockdown market,
the cash on corporate balance sheets is at record highs. Corporate profit margins measured by the S&P 500 is at record highs too.
Some businesses might use extra cash to invest in new technology or factories or even hire more people. But more established companies sometimes invest in themselves, literally through stock buybacks.
The company's basically buying itself.
Eric Compton, an equity research analyst at Morningstar, says when a company buys its own shares, it pushes up its stock value.
So it's kind of like a way of them giving back to their shareholders, doing something with that excess cash.
Now, there are times when a company wants to hoard excess cash, which is why it would suspend buybacks. Maybe there's a merger or acquisition in its future, or maybe it's just looking to build some savings cushion, like anyone would, in case there's, say, an impending economic slowdown. David Cass is a professor of finance at the University of Maryland.
We don't know if this will be a Category 1 hurricane or a Category 5 hurricane. An appropriate defensive strategy by large corporations would be, hey, maybe we should start conserving our cash now.
Any company can suspend buybacks, but it's news when a major bank does it because it has so much global data about consumer savings, spending, and debt. Does that mean J.P. Morgan's move spells doom and gloom? Howard Silverblatt is an analyst at S&P Dow Jones Indices.
It's a cautionary note. But it's the view of a single bank, even a major bank, while important, does not set the tone and the trend going forward.
He says if we start to see a bunch of other big banks do the same, then we should lean in a little closer. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, there was some leaning in and leaning out. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Mortgage rates ticked back up this week. The average rate on a 30-year fixed, Freddie Mac said today, is just over 5.5%. And that inflation number yesterday, showing prices up more than 9% annually, pretty much guarantees a big rate increase from the Fed later this month, which in turn could drive mortgage rates even higher. For a look at how all this is affecting would-be home buyers and home builders, we called up Allie Wolf. She's the chief economist at the housing analytics and data firm Zonda.
I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that housing has been and always will be an interest rate sensitive industry. So as we've seen interest rates go up, borrowing costs go up, we've seen consumers react the way you would imagine, which is they've been slowing demand and slowing their desire for homes because of how expensive housing has become.
You talk to builders, you know, constantly, and I've seen some of your tweets. They've used words like evaporate to describe what's happened with their markets. How much has their business shifted?
It's a really interesting question because we know that the monthly payment for a mortgage has gone up 40% since the beginning of the year. So it's clearly a lot more expensive to buy a home. And what a lot of builders say is people still so desperately want to purchase. It's just that the market has become so difficult financially, but also there's a lot of economic and financial uncertainty out there. And so a lot of consumers have just stepped out.
Are you seeing prices drop? Are builders actually cutting their prices and offering other incentives? The kind of thing that was kind of unheard of a few months ago?
This is a very complicated question. I know it sounds simple, but the reason I say that is typically the last thing a builder wants to do is cut their prices. So it's a very tricky thing because the builders are trying to drum up demand while also trying to keep their buyers in backlog, those that have already signed a contract, happy. But to directly answer your question, 11% of builders have, at this point, dropped their prices. 70% of builders, according to our data at Zonda, kept prices flat in June compared to May. But again, 11% dropped their prices.
I wonder, though, what this slowdown could mean for the underlying housing shortage. You know, if building slows down, do we find ourselves right back where we started when demand comes back and there just aren't enough houses for the people who want them?
The answer is yes. I think the most simple way to think about the market is when sales slow, housing starts will slow as well. And this is for two main reasons. I think reason one is if a builder is already having a hard time selling all of the homes that they have built today, why are they going to build more homes that maybe they may struggle to sell? And then secondarily, if you're a lender, do you want to lend to builders to build homes in an uncertain market? So you have a couple of those factors that will keep housing starts compressed until we see the market turn around. But the undersupply of the market can shift on a dime. Housing inventory is undersupplied long-term, and I would say structurally undersupplied.
What should we keep in mind as we see, you know, the potential for more rate hikes coming from the Fed and a housing market that is getting maybe back to something more like normal?
There's a lot of hope that the housing market slows. And I would say that hope comes from potential buyers, that hope comes from policymakers just trying to get housing less feverish. And we've absolutely seen that. But I also don't want to discount the ripple effect of what a slowing housing market can mean to the wider economy. We've already seen loan officers, mortgage companies cut staff. Some builders have already cut staff. When consumers aren't buying homes as quickly, there's less spending elsewhere in the economy, and you're going to see some businesses cutting costs. So slowing housing does not just stop at the point of sale. That can spread into slowing overall economic growth as well.
All right. Allie Wolf is chief economist at Zonda. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Amy.
Tomorrow, we'll get the latest GDP numbers from the world's second largest economy, China. And though the official report is expected to show some growth, some analysts say the Chinese economy likely contracted in the second quarter of the year. COVID lockdowns in Shanghai, China's financial and transport hub, slowed business in the spring. And the country's zero-tolerance COVID policy continues, even as the rest of the world is learning to live with the virus and opening up. Our China correspondent Jennifer Pak has been talking to Shanghai business owners to find out what lockdown has cost them.
Chen Weiming owns a bath products firm. He was locked in his apartment from early March, a month earlier than the rest of the city. He made videos on social media showing COVID tests taken almost daily, how he made do with government food handouts, and his collection of 40-plus empty wine bottles.
Today is day 88 of being locked inside my home. I've drunk a lot of red wine.
He drank mostly French wine. Chen Weiming says the lockdown for him wasn't all bad, personally. But professionally, his company ground to a halt.
Logistics stopped. We couldn't send products to customers.
So he did something no boss wants to do. He asked his customers, mainly golf courses, to source from his competitors until the lockdown was over. Even before the Shanghai lockdown, a lot of businesses felt squeezed, like medical supplies manufacturer SunTop Medical. Company boss Colin Zhao says freight prices soared.
Usually, a container to Europe costs $2,000 to $3,000. Now, it's about $15,000 to $20,000.
And his extra costs no doubt trickle down to the end consumers in Europe and the U.S. And spare a thought for Shanghai's restaurants. They were the first to close and the last to reopen during the lockdowns. Wang Ying runs a lamb hot pot restaurant, and when I reached him back in May, he hadn't worked for at least 2 months.
I feel depressed. I cannot do business during the lockdown, and yet I still pay for all my workers. I'm losing money every day.
Not much revenue either for Frank Tsai of China Crossroads. He organizes public lectures, which are obviously not allowed during lockdown. Plus,
my partner had a mental health emergency, and she required hospitalization.
But they couldn't get her a bed at the best public mental health hospital.
And the staff there said, in normal times, you would get a bed because she's obviously in a very bad condition, but not now because there's such a huge waiting list right now.
That's because the waiting lists at public hospitals were huge during the lockdown. They did get into a private international hospital, which was far more expensive than the public one, but the results weren't satisfying. On June the 1st, most of Shanghai could get back to work. There was supposed to be relief for businesses, says hot pot restaurant owner Wang Ying.
The government called for the rent to be reduced for 6 months, but the shopping mall we're in only gave us a discount for 1 month. And we still have to pay the usual property management and marketing fees.
No relief either for medical supplies manufacturer Colin Zhao. And after a recalculation by the authorities, he has to pay more into his employees' social security fund.
It's an extra $30 a month per employee.
And on top of that, just one COVID infection could send buildings citywide back into lockdown and trigger mass testing. Colin Zhao says success for him this year is not about profits, but survival. In Shanghai, where I'm free to move about for now, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
Coming up,
you know, you'd have a TikToker.
Gen Z, I'm looking at you. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average subtracted 142 points, about 0.5%, to close at 30,630. The NASDAQ gained 3 points, much less than 0.1%, to finish at 11,251. And the S&P 500 fell 11 points, 0.3%, to end at 3790. J.P. Morgan Chase slipped 3.5% after that disappointing earnings report we told you about. Morgan Stanley's quarterly report underwhelmed, too. Shares fell 0.4%. And those results were a drag on other bank stocks. Wells Fargo gave up 0.8%. Goldman Sachs lost almost 3%. Bank of America sank 2.3%. Today, B of A was fined $225 million by the feds over unfair and deceptive practices related to a prepaid public benefit card program earlier in the pandemic. You are listening to Marketplace.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know.
Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Marketplace. I'm Amy Scott. Air travel is one of the biggest sources of global carbon emissions, and while a steep drop in flying during the pandemic cut aviation emissions in half, as demand bounces back, so does the environmental impact. The aviation industry has proven much harder to wean from fossil fuels than, say, ground transportation, where viable alternatives are increasingly available. But that may be changing. Alaska Airlines and Microsoft have announced a new partnership with a carbon capture startup called 12 that's developed a process to convert CO2 into sustainable jet fuel. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
When it comes to cars and trucks, the sustainable future is all about going electric. Take out internal combustion engines, drop in a battery. That's a challenge with airplanes, says Dan Rutherford at the International Council on Clean Transportation.
Aircraft are very mass sensitive, so they need to have a really energy-dense fuel.
Big, heavy batteries? Not so great. So the focus is on finding cleaner sources of liquid fuel.
Industry honestly has been working on this for a long time, and supply is minuscule today.
Most of the alternatives available are biofuels, says Laura Hutchinson at sustainable energy nonprofit RMI.
Using tallow or animal fat and used cooking oil.
Like those converted diesel cars powered by old French fry grease or corn ethanol mixed in gasoline.
Those have a lot of challenges with sustainability more broadly defined.
Growing crops for biofuel can also be harmful to the environment, and most sources have been too expensive to produce at scale, significantly more costly than fossil jet fuel. That's why Alaska Airlines is looking to promote next-generation fuels created from waste products that are plentiful, says Diana Burkett Rocco, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs and Sustainability.
There's no one solution for this problem. And so it's sort of adding yet another kind of arrow to that quiver of another pathway to produce fuel.
But she says the airline industry operates on tight margins. So support from other partners like Microsoft and policymakers will be key. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
I know, it feels like summer just got started, but the back-to-school countdown is on. In some districts, students are due back next month, and that means the scramble for teachers is on, too. Some schools still have lots of open positions. STEM and special ed teachers are in especially high demand. As Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, school leaders are having to get creative to fill those spots.
Alex Mosman does hiring for Indianapolis Public Schools. He sees targeted ads all the time for private companies trying to recruit teachers to work in tech or sales.
It's just a very visible sense of what we're competing against.
And what they're competing against is options for remote work and sometimes higher salaries. The district currently has about 100 open teaching positions, 40 of them in science and math or special ed roles. So Indianapolis is offering hiring and retention bonuses to teachers. Mosman's also brainstorming about how to offer flexible work in the future.
Remote work is here. The labor market is shifting. We need to get ahead of that.
Mosman is clear with applicants that teaching is hard, and the district provides mentors and mental health services to help them stick with it. Other districts are providing help with housing, either money to help pay for it, or they're becoming landlords. Gretchen Weber is with the education nonprofit WestEd.
So some places it's a stipend. Here we're giving you an extra $1,500 or whatever a month. In other places, here's the housing option we provide. You know, here's the tiny home. You can live here for $100 a month or rent free.
But some districts are just having to make do with fewer teachers. Melissa Sadorf is superintendent of the Stanfield Elementary School District in Pinal County, Arizona. She's had two elementary school teachers give notice in the past 2 weeks. So she's putting one experienced teacher in charge of two classes
that they're going to be responsible for. And then they're going to supervise a paraprofessional in a room that's next door with a connecting door.
Sadorf says this puts extra stress on those experienced teachers. So her district is providing them with extra money and time off as compensation. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
When you're watching an ad on TV or online, you usually know it's an ad, right? Someone is clearly selling something. But when it comes to sponsored content on social media, what we might have called an advertorial back in the day, the lines can be blurry. On TikTok, with its 1 billion plus users, content creators are supposed to disclose when they're getting paid to promote a skincare product or coffee substitute. But as Sarah Morrison recently reported for Recode, that's not always the case. Sarah, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you describe what one of these non-ad ads looks like? What would I be seeing or not seeing?
I mean, there's a lot of different things, but, you know, you'd have a TikToker. Maybe there'd be a product like prominently featured in it. Maybe they'd be using it. Maybe they'd be extolling, you know, the virtues of it. But there wouldn't be anything maybe saying it's an ad. So I think for some people, you can sort of tell that it's an ad or that there's probably some exchange, but it's not explicitly said there. And, you know, according to the laws we have in this country, it is supposed to be.
So give me an example. There's a content creator slash influencer who always seems to have a bottle of a certain drink in her hand, right?
Yeah, I think one of the ones I found was Charli D'Amelio. She's the second most followed person on TikTok. And I do think sometimes she does have these disclosures correctly. But there would be a couple times where, like, this drink Muse, and, you know, she's holding it, he's talking about it, whatever.
This one's pretty simple. They're really good, and I really like them, and they have a lot of different flavors and a lot of health benefits, so.
But she doesn't explicitly say, this is an ad, or I've been given, like, some kind of compensation in some way to be talking about this. And, I mean, I guess it's very possible that in that particular instance, she just happened to want to tell us about Muse, but she does, as far as we know, like, have some kind of relationship with them already.
So one of the questions in your piece is kind of who's responsible for this, right? Is it the platform? Is it the influencer? As you mentioned, some of them are very young and sort of a cottage industry. Or is it, you know, regulators? Is the FTC actually, you know, policing these sponsored content posts?
See, that's the tricky thing, because I guess I had always assumed that it was the influencers. Like, you're supposed to know the rules and do them, and if you don't, it's on you. It's a little more complicated than that, actually, because brands and maybe the intermediaries, like the agencies that they're working with, they're also supposed to be having, like, monitoring and compliance programs to make sure that the people they're paying are marketing their products, you know, according to the rules. And then, yeah, the FTC is one of the agencies in this country that is supposed to be regulating this, but they have a huge job beyond watching TikToks for proper ad disclosures. It's like an impossible job.
So what's the harm? I mean, you know, most viewers are probably pretty savvy and recognize, oh, you know, that Muse bottle keeps showing up. Clearly, this is an ad. But you argue that there are vulnerable people using TikTok who may not be aware of that.
Sure. I mean, it's an audience that skews younger, and they tend to just be more, like, engaged. And these might be not be things that they would have bought or known about otherwise. I mean, that's what ads are for. You know, somebody I talked to in my article said, you know, it's kind of small potatoes when you look at it that way. And I don't disagree. But we have a case, and this is actually Instagram, where there was this detox tea company that weren't disclosing ads. And it was like people like Cardi B were, not, you know, were doing
yeah.
these. So people were, you know, getting Cardi B or whoever telling them that this detox tea would, like, do all of these health things that it wouldn't. And then there's also, you know, another thing to think about is the harm to, like, other companies. Like if you are doing things right, but a competitor like isn't, and people are buying those products because they don't quite see that they're ads. And so they're more prone to think this is a legitimate, genuine endorsement.
And to actually watch it, right?
Yeah. And your business is like kind of suffering because you're following the rules. And a product that may not even be better than yours is doing better because they're maybe cheating.
All right. Sarah Morrison is a senior reporter for Recode at Vox. Thank you so much for your reporting.
Thank you.
This final note on the way out, for all you Wordle fans out there, Hasbro and the New York Times have teamed up to create a board game. Axios reports that the analog version will be called Wordle, the party game. Earlier this year, some Wordle devotees were disgruntled when the Times bought the viral word-guessing game for an undisclosed seven-figure sum. The retail price is no secret, $19.99. All right, we gotta go, but here's your moment of economic context. First-time claims for unemployment benefits rose to a nearly eight-month high last week, 244,000. That's 9,000 more than the week before. Something to watch. Amir Babawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diantha Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Seek are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Amy Scott. We will be back tomorrow. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.